release almost 80,000 ham radio licensees have replaced their sequentially issued call signs with a vanity call sign since the program began in 1996. The FCC says that when the program began, it established what it called the broad outlines of the vanity call sign system under which to function. As a part of it, the FCC concluded that call signs generally should not be available for reassignment for 2 years following the death of a licensee or expiration or termination of the license for that call sign. In doing so, the Commission made exceptions for former holders of the call sign, close relatives of the deceased former holder, and club stations of which a deceased former holder was a member. The Commission did not, however, specify all of the procedures governing the vanity call sign system. Rather, it indicated that the procedures would be set out in the public notices announcing starting gates for the groups receiving initial priority, and that the procedures would be adjusted from gate to gate as experience dictated. The procedures announced in that 1996 public notices announcing those gates are still in effect, but they are not set forth in the Commission's rules. WT Docket 09-209 states that the FCC now believes that certain provisions should be codified into its rules and others added, so that the vanity call sign system will be fair, equitable, and transparent to all amateur service licensees. Also, when it released the 1996 vanity call sign report and order, it used the opportunity to resume issuing new club station licenses. It now says that it believes certain rule changes to club station licensing rules may be appropriate. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bruce Tennant, K6PZW in Los Angeles.
The comment period for WT Docket 09209 will extend for 60 days after it's published in the Federal Register. Historically, items appear in the Federal Register approximately 7 to 10 days after they appear on the FCC website. Reply comments can be made up to 75 days after publication in the Federal Register.
And speaking about the vanity call sign system, have you ever wondered how it really works? Well, the December issue of CQ Magazine truly does have all the answers. And it has them in a way that anyone can understand without having to have a copy of the Part 97 Amateur Service Rules at hand. The article is titled, The Perils and Pitfalls of Getting a Vanity Call Sign. And its author is none other than Fred Maya, W5YI, who is the founder of the nation's second largest volunteer examiner coordinator, simply known as W5YIVEC. And using a very simple question and answer format, Fred takes us on a trip from the dawning of the vanity call sign system to the present. Along the way, he explains who is eligible for what type of vanity call, the reasons for this, the exceptions to the mandatory waiting time for a call to become available, and much more. If you've ever had any questions about the vanity call sign system and how to navigate it, this is your chance to get every detail in a clear and concise manner. Again, the article is titled, The Perils and Pitfalls of Getting a Vanity Call Sign by Fred Maya, W5YI. It begins on page 30 of the December 2009 issue of CQ Magazine that's on sale right now. The next World Radio Communications Conference takes place in January of 2012, and ham radio is making ready to face any challenges that it might bring to the service. The International Amateur Radio Union Secretary is Ron Stafford, W6ROD. He says that every IARU member society capable of doing so should take the initiative to be in contact with their own telecommunications administration and let it be known what the union's position is on the agenda items that influence the amateur radio service. The most significant of these so far are the implementation of the radio location service in the range 30 to 300 megahertz, the possible allocations in the range 3 to 50 megahertz to the radio location service for oceanographic radar applications, and the effect of emissions from short-range devices. Also likely to be discussed is a ham radio allocation of about 15 kilohertz in parts of the band from 415 to 526.5 kilohertz, this on a secondary basis and taking into account the need to protect existing services.
The FCC has granted several more requests by hospitals and government agencies to permit hams in their employ to take part in emergency communications preparedness drills. Covered in this latest round of waivers to Section 97.113A3 of the Amateur Service Rules are the Murray County Medical Center in Slayton, Minnesota, the Center for Emergency Response to Terrorism of the Missouri Department of Health and Senior Services in Jefferson City, Missouri, the Culver City Fire Department in Culver City, California, the Draper City Police Department, Draper, Utah, and the town of North Attleboro, and its Board of Health in North Attleboro, Massachusetts. While most of the requests were for single-day events, some, like the request from Draper City Police Department and the Murray County Medical Center, were for multiple drills spread across several months. Both were given permits for use of on-staff hands on December 2, 2009, plus January 6, February 3, March 3, April 7, May 5, and June 2, 2010. The FCC also opened the door to granting further dates and additional hands by filing a separate waiver request. The FCC issued its first waiver of 97-113A3 back on October 27 to the Commonwealth of Kentucky for a full-scale exercise on October 28. In granting all of these waivers, the FCC stated that it was in the public's interest to do so.
Preparations have been made to use amateur radio instead of telephones for calls to the emergency services. This if the Calva Bridge near the United Kingdom city Cumbria collapses due to flooding. The North Pennines Rainet Group website says, should the bridge fall, that it will be called out to cover 999 calls, and this will be 24-hour-a-day operation until other lines of communications can be reestablished. According to a Cumbria County Council news release, if the collapse of the bridge takes place, telephone communications would be lost to about 3,000 homes north of the river. To maintain communications to that area, it says that ham radio operators will be available at certain locations to pass on calls to the various emergency services. Telephone service to the community affected is carried by cables that span the bridge. While British Telecom believes alternate lines could handle any calls, the Rainet hams are prepared for a full-scale call-out if they are needed. In other UK flood-related news, the North Pennines Rainet Group, supported by Rainet members from Merseyside, Lancashire, Dumfries, and Galloway, manned a single radio link from Friday morning, November 27th. It was set up between North Workington and Carlisle to provide resilience for 999 calls following the localized failure of British Telecom's cables due to the Northside Bridge collapse. The requirement for this finished at 1530 UTC the following day when all lines were restored.
From the United States of America, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the N5 NVI repeater, serving New Orleans, Louisiana.
Mustang, Oklahoma officials have yet to respond to a letter from ARRL attorney Christopher D. Inlay, W3KD, disregarding the city's attempt to keep a ham radio operator from transmitting. Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, is in the newsroom with the details.
The Mustang News online newspaper says that back on November 6th, ARRL General Counsel Christopher D. Inlay sent a seven-page letter to Mustang city officials. In it, he urged the city to rescind a certified letter that the city had sent to Mustang Heights resident John Ripley, KD5WFT, on October 30th. That letter told Ripley to stop transmitting using his radio tower. The city claims that it has jurisdiction over radio transmissions made by hams based on an ordinance that is enacted in 2000. The law states that any tower or antenna not more than 70 feet in height can be owned and operated by a federally licensed amateur radio operator. However, it can exclusively be used only as a receive facility. But that law appears to be in direct conflict with the Federal Communications long-standing concept of federal preemption. That's the mandate that it, and only it, has jurisdiction over radio transmission. In his letter, Inlay noted that all radio and telecommunications are regulated by the Communications Act of 1934 and cited a dozen federal cases supporting his position. One was a 1936 lawsuit entitled Fisher's Blend Station versus Tax Commission of the State of Washington. In that action, the Supreme Court held that by its very nature, broadcasting transcends state lines and is national in scope and importance. This characteristic, says the court, brings it within the purpose of protection and subject to the control of the Commerce Clause. In his letter, Inlay wrote that if no action was taken by Mustang, that the ARRL would seek a declaratory ruling from the Federal Communications Commission. According to the news article, Inlay also said that if he does not receive a response from Mustang city officials, that he plans to send another letter before filing with the FCC. City Manager Mike Rutledge told the online newspaper that he had received Inlay's letter and had referred it to Mustang's attorney, he says that any response to the letter is up to the city's legal counsel. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF in Los Angeles.
If the ARRL decides to bring the matter before the FCC, and if the agency grants such a declaratory ruling, it would likely be at a minimum to direct the city to rescind its letter banning Ripley from transmitting. It also could go as far as warning the city that it had best keep out of matters that are preempted by the federal government mandate.
New regulations for antennas and transmission towers in Dixon, California should not affect amateur radio operators there. This thanks to a keen-eyed local ham who took notice of a proposed ordinance under consideration by the Dixon City Council and made his voice heard. In May, during a public hearing before the Planning Commission, Dixon resident Bill Paul, KD6JUI, voiced a concern about how a proposed ordinance to set standards regarding antennas and transmission towers might affect ham radio operators in the area. He was also concerned, according to a staff report, that a zoning ordinance that limits the area an antenna or tower can cover might affect the type or height of antennas a ham operator could construct. Commissioners recommended that the City Council adopt the proposed ordinance, subject to staff working with Paul to try and address the issues. During its last meeting, the Council tentatively approved the ordinance, subject to staff removing any regulations that apply to amateur radio antennas.
Meantime, some good antenna-related news for a ham in Stettin in the UK. That's where an amateur radio tower mast, which is more than 11 meters high, has been given the go-ahead by town planners. Members of the Stettin Parish Council had objected to the proposed tower and antenna based on visual impact when the mast was raised. There were also four objections from the ham operator's neighbors who claimed it would be out of keeping with the area and could interfere with TV reception in the area. But the committee was given expert evidence that UK telecommunications regulator Ofcom is the agency with jurisdiction over the antenna, and therefore it should not be a consideration. The Radio Society of Great Britain told the planners that the installation of the ham's tower and antenna could be of value to the area for use in emergency situations. After hearing that when retracted, the tower will only be about 5 meters high, and weighing all the other evidence before it, the Borough Council's Development Control Committee backed the plans. An 11-meter high tower is roughly 36 feet here in the USA.
Contrary to internet rumors, production of the popular IC-706 Mark IIG has not ceased. The erroneous report of the radio's demise came in a Wireless Institute of Australia news report that said that the 706 was no longer being made, and that Navcom Electronics said that there were only 14 units currently held in stock in Australia. While that might be the case down under, Amateur Radio Newsline has received word from ICOM America that the decision to stop selling the IC-706 was likely one made by ICOM Australia. On this side of the Pacific, ICOM says that the IC-706 Mark IIG will continue in the ICOM America product line. The original IC-706 was introduced over a dozen years ago and quickly developed into what might be best described as a cult following. The radio was not all that much bigger than a dual-band FM transceiver of that era, but in fact an amazingly sensitive all-band receiver and powerful ham-band transmitter into a relatively tiny package measuring only 6.5 inches by 2.28 by 7.88 inches. Over the years, the IC-706 has seen many upgrades. The latest version is the Mark IIG, which adds many new features and capabilities not found in the previous 706 and 706 Mark II versions, including the UT-106 DSP module as a standard feature. Many hams called it the perfect mobile and portable station, and stayed with it even after rival manufacturers brought out their own tiny all-band transceivers with similar or even more advanced features. It's also a radio with one of the highest resale values on the used equipment market. Also included in the WIA story was a claim that ICOM was instituting a 5-year warranty on all of its products. Well, that's only true if you live in Australia. According to ICOM America, that is an ICOM Australia-only project. No other ICOM distributor is offering a 5-year warranty.
Made in Australia may be the label on the next piece of ham gear you buy. This, as a company down under called Genesis Radio, announces it will be producing a new multi-band low-power software-defined radio transceiver kit to be available worldwide. The Genesis G59 transceiver will cover the amateur bands from 1.8 to 54 megahertz and produce up to 10 watts output when coupled with the GPA-10 amplifier. A version with extended band coverage, the G59D, that covers the increasingly popular pan-European 70 MHz band, should be available sometime next year as well. More information on this new Australian ham radio transceiver kit available at www.genesisradio.com.au.
Three incumbent ARRL section managers were re-elected in races that concluded on Tuesday, November 24. In Alabama, Jay Isbell, KA4KUN, outpolled challenger Les Rayburn and won LF by a vote of 513 votes to 167. Meantime, up in the Alaska section manager election, Jim Larson, AL7FS of Anchorage, won his second two-year term of office when he received 176 votes. His challenger, David Stevens, KL7EV, received only 65. Lastly, Ron Cowan, KB0DTI, will continue as the Kansas section manager. After he received 382 votes, challenger Joseph Plankinton, WD0DMV, received only 175. Eight other section managers ran unopposed and were declared re-elected. All began their new terms of office January 1, 2010. Jim Hawkins, WA2WHV, says he's uploaded a video of the 1998 tour of Voice of America's Transmitter Plant A to YouTube. Jim says the title is Tour of Voice of America Transmitter Plant. It's hosted by Carl Leinberger, former senior technician. In it, you'll see a lot of the heavy iron that brings VOA programming to the world. This includes the giant 500,000-watt Marconi and Continental transmitters, as well as some lower power units by Technical Materials Corporation and General Electric. In the case of the GE transmitter, lower power means 250,000 watts capability. According to WA2WHV, the show runs 40 minutes. It's broken into five parts. You can search for it using the Find feature on the YouTube website. Jim adds he hopes you enjoy taking the video tour.
This is Ham Radio News for today's radio amateur. From the United States of America, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline, with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org. and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following radio amateur. One of ham radio's most prolific writers has become a silent key. This with word that Dr. Jerry Sevick, W2FMI, passed away Sunday, November 29th at age 90. Jerry Sevick was a graduate of Wayne State University and a member of its Athletic Hall of Fame. He was drafted by both the Chicago Bears and Detroit Lions, but did not play professional football. He served as a pilot in the U.S. Army Air Corps in World War II, later graduated from Harvard with a doctorate in applied physics. He then taught at Wayne State University and worked as the local weather forecaster at WXYZ-TV in Detroit. Dr. Sevick also worked for Bell Laboratories in Murray Hill, New Jersey, and retired as the Director of Technical Relations. He also was a member of the New Providence Amateur Radio Club. It was his interest in amateur radio that launched Dr. Sevick into experiments with short vertical antennas and broadband matching networks. He's noted for a classic series on short vertical antennas that appeared in QST magazine. His April 1978 article on short ground radio systems now serves as the world standard for earth conductivity measurements. In the course of designing networks to match coaxial cable to short ground-mounted vertical antennas, the transmission line transformer was looked at as a possible vehicle. He undertook the characterization and design of transformers for low impedance applications. This resulted in his book, Transmission Line Transformers, first published in 1990 by the ARRL, and currently available from Noble Publishing. He also presented a series on balance in Communications Quarterly and a series on unbalanced to unbalanced transformers in CQ Magazine. The latter was lead to his book titled Building and Using Balans and Unans that was published by CQ in 2003. Dr. Sevick was a technical advisor for the ARRL, a member of the IEEE, Sigma Chi, Sigma Pi, Sigma, and Phi Delta Kappa. A memorial service was scheduled for December 2nd at the Fellowship Village in Basking Ridge, New Jersey.
The 2010 Voice Over Internet Protocol Conference will take place on Saturday, April 10, at the Circus Conference Area in Las Vegas, Nevada. The event is sponsored by the Nevada Amateur Radio Repeaters, Inc., which began in 2002 as the Internet Radio Linking Project, or IRLP, was starting to grow worldwide. Nowadays, the conference is open to all forms of VOIP communications, including IRLP, Echo Link, D-Star, All-Star Link, and various other associated applications. The conference starts at 8:30 a.m., runs till 5, local Las Vegas time. Those interested in presenting a topic should let that be known as they register. Questions to w7aor@narri.org. More information about the event, along with the registration forms, are online in the URL found in this week's printed Amateur Radio Newsline report. Controllers of the SO67 Sambandia SAT ham radio transponder are looking for input on the best way to utilize the new ham radio bird. This because it's a shared payload that cannot be in operation all of the time. In an effort to make this as painless as possible, SO67 controller Jan Albert, ZR1AJK, is requesting comments on the possible use of regional coordinators to schedule access to Sambandia SAT. Coordinators would be responsible for setting up agendas in advance for their specific regions. This while taking into account the pool of possible satellite passes, as well as the need for the bird for local events. The SO67 command station would then simply load the schedules on a weekly basis. Initial focus has been on Europe, the Republic of South Africa, South and North America, including Canada, Japan, and Australia, and New Zealand. Now, ZR1JAK is inviting suggestions for amateur radio use of the Sambandia SAT as it flies over other regions as well. Interested satellite operations are invited to email responses to the AMSAT bulletin board, or if you prefer, ZR1JAK's work address, jak@sunspace.co.za.
To celebrate the launch of China's first amateur satellite called XW1, AMSAT China has set up a special event station using the call sign BT3WX. Operations at BT3WX have already commenced, and the special event station will remain active until XW1 is launched. The station plans to operate on all high-frequency amateur bands from 10 to 160 meters and on VHF and UHF amateur satellite bands. On satellites, the modes include FM, SSB, CW, RIDI, and PACSAT. A specific launch date for XW1 has not been released, but is expected in mid-December. The satellite's communications payload will include a beacon and three crossband transponders operating in FM, linear, and digital modes. Meantime, stations completing two-way communications with BT3WX on 9 different bands and modes can apply for the BT3WX HF Communications Award. Stations completing two-way communications with the station through at least 2 different modes of transponders can apply for the BT3WX Satellite Communications Award. AMSAT is inviting hams worldwide to participate in Straight Key Night on Oscar 2010. Taking part in this event is both fun and quite easy. Just operate CW through any Oscar satellite between 0000 and 2400 UTC on January 1st, 2010, using a straight hand key. There are no other rules, no scoring, and no need to send in a log. In keeping with the friendly nature of this event, all participants are encouraged to nominate someone they worked for Best Fist of Those You Work. Please send your nomination to w2rs@amsat.org. A list of those nominated will appear in the AMSAT News Service and also published in the AMSAT Journal.
In DX, word that Willis Island's back on the air. David Burton reports that he's been assigned to the Bureau of Meteorology station on Willis for the next 6 months. He'll be operating with the call sign VK9WBM. His station consists of an ICOM IC718 and an Alinco DX70. He'll be activating the HF bands and 6 meters using a two-element quad, QSL via VK4DMC. K7WZB and K9WZB. He'll be operating K2V from the island of St. Croix from December 2 through the 14th. They'll use 160 through 6 meters and will be monitoring 6 most of the time for openings to the United States and Europe. Modes available will be sideband, RIDI, CW, and PSK31 on all bands. QSL via K9WZB direct only. Further info at QRZ.com under the call sign K2V. M0JAX is looking for 22 people with a full amateur radio license privilege to join a de-expedition to Bahrain, leaving February 2011. He's planning a 2-week trip based at the Intercontinental Hotel, with 8 stations on the air 24 hours a day. Operators will be working 3 shifts to keep the stations on the air for the 2 weeks. If you're interested, send your details and why you think you'd be an asset to this de-expedition to the Radio Society of Great Britain and the attention Radcom magazine. Your letters will be passed on to M0JAX. The S2DX team's preparing for another de-expedition to St. Martin's Island in the Bay of Bengal. The scheduled dates are February 21 through the 25th, depending on the dates that the licenses they receive carry. This is the second de-expedition carried out by the group to the same location. They made over 3,000 QSOs from there last January.
And finally this week, in keeping with the spirit of the upcoming season, comes word that the Irish Radio Transmitting Society has received a very generous donation from one of its members. A complete mobile ready to go. The story goes this way. For health reasons, EI6IJ was forced to cease driving. Instead of putting his car up for sale, he instead gifted his 2008 Kia Rio hatchback to Ireland's National Ham Radio Society. The vehicle had already been converted for disabled use and professionally outfitted with a Yaesu FT-857 all-band transceiver. The society says it won't actually keep the car very long. Instead, it will put it up for sale with the proceeds used to assist members who, for reasons of changed circumstances such as ill health or change of accommodations, are finding it difficult to practice and enjoy their hobby. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, the CGC Communicator, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Pen DX Bulletin, Radio Netherlands, RAIN, the RSGB, the Southgate News, and Australia's WIA News, that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline using our temporary address of 28197 Robin Avenue, Saugus, California, 91350. For now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, at the editor's desk, I'm Jim Dameron, N8TNW.
And I'm Jeff Clark, KHJAC, saying 73. We thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2009. All rights reserved.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the New England Reflector 912.
Channel 6.
Welcome to the W2VL repeater. The time is 12:38 a.m.
And to RDB testing. Your DSQ with Tim and 2RSO.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Frank. I appreciate it. Just charged up this HT. Anyway, getting ready to call in tonight, so thank you much. And 2RDB.
73 Tim and 2RSO clear.
The time is 12:48 a.m. This is the W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater system. The time is 12:58 a.m. Good morning. The time is 1 a.m. 73 and good night from the W2VL repeater. Net tonight at 8:30. Welcome to the W2VL repeater. The time is 1:19 a.m. Good morning. This is the W2VL repeater. time is 1:23 a.m. 73 and good night from the WQVL repeater. Net tonight at 8:30 WQVL repeater system.
File cabinet. like the appliance hand trucks with the belt, and you get the handle, and you crank it, and that, you know, those things. I know a guy that has one, and that would be, what the heck's this called? KC2OYH, Obnoxious Young Ham. He lives out in Kings Park. I know he has one of those big appliance hand trucks with the belt and everything.
You got the crank to lift it up the stairs?
No, it's just the crank to keep it tight on the hand truck. It's got the it's got the rails on the bottom, so that you tilt it back, you pull it up a step, and the wheel hits the step below, then you come back, you tilt it back again. It's one of those.
2-0-1-4.
Say, called a refrigerator hand truck or an appliance hand truck. You can get those easy. W2OSR, pick it up. Hand it over to John.
Hi, Charlie. I was just listening here. I'm programming one of my new radios I just got. What you need to do is see if you can find somebody that you talk to that's in the plumbing business that does boiler installation. That's what they use to get them up and down the stairs into the basement.
Hey, isn't that a guy who moves safes? Saying all that stuff.
Some guys just seem to just do it with a regular hand truck. I've watched them do it enough times. The safe guys, yeah, if I could get one over there, I can't find one. It's gotten to the point where, like I said, I'd like to do it this week, and I've gotten told the Thursday the week after officially, and it's, you know, because the house closes that day, and I got to get that thing out of there, and it's getting to be a serious issue. Abby Rental supposedly has one, and I said, oh yeah, but the battery's dead, we got to get a battery, and that was a week ago. So I said, okay, I'll come for it on Saturday. And they got there Saturday, and they said the battery's back ordered. We don't know when we're going to get the battery.
Yeah, well, I don't know. You got a customer that needs it. You do what you got to do. You know? Anyway. Now, which house you got to get out of, Charlie? Is this the parents' house now that you're talking about?
That'd be the one. There's a very heavy fireproof file cabinet down there, and it's got to get up the stairs and over to, you know, and out of the house. And the guy who's doing the clean out says he should be able to move it. And then I'll just arrange for him to bring it to my place and bring it down. Or once I get it to my place, you know, I have time to bring it down, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I hear you. Anyway. I pick up the work phone. I'm vibrating. I'll be right back. W2HCB.
G2B, you still there, Bob?
I'm still here. I bought a used ICOM 91AD, and I'm just sitting here with a computer typing in all the frequencies for Ari. We only have 32 programs in here on each channel. I guess I did the other channel the other day. I'm trying to do the channel B side. It also programs in the Star repeater in New York. So, what do I got? I got about another 5 or 6 to go here.
It's got a 91 without the D. It's an okay rig. Makes a better scanner than it does a rig. Tends to get very hot if you transmit with it for more than, you know, very short periods of time.
Yeah, I've had the burning hand syndrome. Anyway, yeah, I've got this. I've also got the Kenwood THF6A. Those two radios will cover me for just about anything I'll ever do with Ari. Getting the push out here to start going to T-Star. That hopes of getting a T-Star repeater up here in the next year or so.
And ICOM, I'm sorry, no D-Star for me. If you want to go EDAX or 5, you know, I'll go that way.
I'm back, W2HCB, no D-star for me.
I'm going to drop out here again since you got somebody to talk to, Charlie. Hey, Bob, if I don't get to talk to you, have a good holiday.
See you. Hopefully the kids won't drive you nuts when you're home. Take care.
Hey, John, I got one guy. My nipple.
You know, you're putting a handle in my way.
Gonna help him. Watch where you put.
Yeah, no. Just going into Casino Boulevard here. One of my drivers got a problem with his truck out in the yard, a nice look. I said, nip, I ain't around the corner, man. You know, wait for the yard rat to get in. Let the yard rat fix you. Yard rat gets in at 6. I'm already up by the Van Wicky. Ain't happening. I'm not turning around.
I'm at the top of the hill, so, you can guess where I am, how long it's going to be before I'm in the tunnel. So I'm going to say 73, or actually, I'll say if I catch you on the other side, I'll catch you on the other side. KG2V.
No problem. How was it through Woodhaven?
Now.
Okay, cool deal. I'm coming up to 108th Street.
G2V.
W2HCB. Yeah, I'll be destinating somewhere on 46th Street this morning.
Number one, WTC.
Morning, Eugene. How are you? W2HCB.
W2HCB, November 1, WTC. Good morning, John. It was quiet out there. You're the only one?
OSR is in the background programming a radio. And Charlie is in the tunnel. And I'm rolling up on Queens Boulevard over here. So what's going on, man? You on your way in? You on your way out? What are you doing?
Nope. On the way in. Heading in. Hopefully it's going to be a good, quick week. And one more week and it's Christmas. I think we got Santa Claus coming to the airport this week, if I remember correctly. I think it's Tuesday or Wednesday.
Wednesday, Queens Aries up there.
Oh, Charlie's out of the hole. Yeah, was he flying in on the North Pole Express? What's he got, a red and white jet airplane? A Gulfstream, G4 or G5?
Morning, Charlie. Actually, I believe it's going to be a red, white, and blue airplane. He usually flies in on, usually pull him in on Delta. Delta usually donates a plane and they tug it into the hangar. Charlie, I heard you say it's going to be Wednesday. Is that correct? Over to you.
I see the emails going back and forth. I'm not doing it this year. Don't have the time off to do it. But it's Wednesday, and I believe you're right. I believe it is Delta. And last time I went, it was a 767 they pulled them in on.
Who's coming in Wednesday and to ZEP?
Ho ho. And not one of Tiger's women.
Okay. Good morning, all. Slipping you for the rotation. Let's see. We're going to slip you between Eugene and somebody and then somebody else. So, and then EB will come in and screw it all up. So, Gary, take it after me. Give it over to Eugene. And they're talking about the jolly fat guy in a red suit coming into Kennedy on Wednesday. W2HCB. Gary?
Okay. I didn't know that he came in by plane. I thought he was brought in by sled and reindeer. Didn't know the tradition. Eugene?
Gary, where have you been? Population of the world has tripled, quadrupled since he started. He needs a jet to get around now. Of course, the reindeer are tied to the jet, but that's the way it goes. Yeah, they have the handicapped kids come in for, I think it's the community mayors that do it. And they bring Santa in on a jet. They tug him into a hangar, and they've got about, usually 500, 600 children they have there. It's pretty good day. Charlie, over to you. You don't know what happened to know what frequency they're using, do you? November 1 WTC.
On the VHF side, they could probably use 14658 with a 1365 PL is the plan that I heard, but there's also another frequency. They're actually bringing a portable repeater with them, and I don't remember the frequency off the top of my head. It is brand new. If you email me, I'll email you the frequency info when I get home tonight. Like I said, they'll be there. They'll be there bright and early. I've done that event many times, and we look forward to it. It's always a fun event. And not on the air, I can tell you one or two secret things about the event and how to deal with one or two things if you get to drop in.
Boy. Anyway. Somebody got a flat. Everybody's slowing down. Look at the person looking at that flat and scratching their head. Hey, boy, I tell you. Anyway, I'm starting to ascend the hill, the first of two, for the tunnel. Gary?
Okay, in that case, by the time it comes around, you might be hitting the dive alarm. No, I'm just starting out, just getting onto the Meadowbrook. I had to feed the car before I left. And while I was feeding the car, the tanker was getting ready to start feeding the underground tanks. So I got there right before he stirred everything up, all the garbage from the bottom. Eugene?
Well, I'm sure your filter thanks you, Gary. Yes, Charlie, when I get home, probably sometime today I'll email you. You can send me that stuff. I'll be at the airport all day like I usually am. I think we'll be doing tours of the airport for some new firefighters, so we'll be around. Over to you, Charlie.
It's pretty cool. It's a fun event. You get a hangar full of screaming kids. They, you know, W2ML and the like talk about carrying, making sure you have headphones for the marathon because it's loud.
No,
that's nothing compared to being in the hangar with 500 or 600 screaming children. It is very loud in that hangar. But we set up we typically set up in the old offices. It's, you know, it's a disused hangar, so, I mean, the conditions are not the world's greatest inside. And we typically mount a base station antenna on one of the railings inside.
All right, gentlemen, the dive alarm is on. Periscope down. 20 degree down bubble. Catch on the other side. W2HCP.
Make sure you close the windows so you don't get wet. All right. Sounds like it's an interesting event. Logistically handling that many people in a confined space, and most of them kiddies. I think that would be the day that I would be hopefully happy I work at the airport so that I could have the big earmuffs to deaden the sound. Eugene?
Yep, it is fun. I actually worked it a couple of times. Went over there. It does get to be quite loud, like Charlie says, and the good portion of the kids, as a matter of fact, all of them are handicapped, so you get some quite interesting things going on. When they see Santa Claus, they just go nuts. It's really a wonderful thing. And Charlie, I don't know if you know anything about that hangar that you're in, but that used to be the East Coast repair facility for Eastern Airlines. And that has a scaffolding system that used to come down from the ceiling and completely encompass a 747. So they would be able to work on any portion of the 747 without putting up a ladder or anything. They could walk from the front to the back, over it, under it. Totally amazing. They could build any part for an airplane they needed. They had machine shops. I mean, everything you could imagine in that building. It was unbelievable when it was fully operational. Over to you.
It was a Pan Am hangar.
There's a lot of Pan Am stuff in the hangar. But, and this will be my last round, so I'm about to pull into the garage to get to work. KG2B.
Okay. 7-3. So if this hangar was such a good hangar to work in, why have they abandoned it, so to speak? Not big enough for the new planes?
Nope, actually Charlie's right. It was Pan Am. Might get those two buildings mixed up. There's another one. They went out of business. They actually went out of business. When they went out of business, nobody else wanted it. Boeing actually wanted to take it over to use it to repair 747s, but they didn't want to. I don't know why it fell through. But yeah, when Pan Am went out of business, a lot of buildings on that portion of the airport did belong to Pan Am, so nobody ever took them over.
Interesting. So they did all this building, yet there are buildings that are vacant. Typical. I guess if an airline came in, what you have to do is inspect the building, make sure that it is in good condition, and take it over. It'll be a lot cheaper for them to rent those buildings from the Port Authority than to start building a whole new building.
Exactly. And there's nothing on that airport that isn't for rent, actually. The only real problem with that building, Gary, is that it's so big. I mean, the thing is literally, I mean, it's gigantic. I think they had the parking lot held about 1,000 to 1,500 cars. That's how many people work there. But, the thing is just massive. So there's no one company that could take it over. And I don't think it's feasible to split up. I think United uses a couple of the hangars, but that's about it. Over to you, November 1, WTC.
And 2 EV.
Stupid brick with the plastic top buildings over there. W2HCB.
John and John, good morning. Okay, now I'm confused. I thought this was a repair facility. That would mean it would be a big hangar if you're going to pull the aircraft in. And how many aircraft could you fit in at once? Evil C and then the Elephant.
It being that it's so big, I was wondering that myself. And, applied and I was accepted, but I didn't accept the job. A job from Pan Am. And I turned it down because they weren't paying enough. And good thing, right? And then about 6 years later, they folded up. Anyway, so there you have it. Anyway, HCB to get it. Give it to Eugene. This is F2EB. 21.
Yeah, those hangars are tremendous. I know the ones he's talking about. They are tremendous. Also, it was last year they found out that I guess it's a bunch of old retirees from Pan Am who have fought real hard, and those hangars will never be touched as far as their physical parents outside, except for restoration purposes. And the city ruled with them on that. And they'll never change the outside of those hangars because it's basically a major landmark in the sculpting of JFK, otherwise known as Eidelhower. So they wanted to retain some footage at the airport. Figure that one out. W2HCB. 36. Making a right turn on 6th Avenue. Eugene?
Didn't know that. Gary, when there was one 747 fit into each hangar, there were four hangars. When they put smaller planes in there, they could put who knows how many smaller planes. I really don't know the exact number, but these things are gigantic, like I said. The building is so big because not only did they have the hangars, but they had offices, repair shops. I mean, like I said, they could fabricate any part of a plane they needed to there to get these things back in the air. It was just, they tell me it was amazing when this thing was in operation. And it was just an unbelievable operation that was there. Over to you, Gary. November 1, WTC.
Okay, Eugene, I get the picture. I always thought of a hangar being a separate building, and this would be like a four-car garage, but big enough for aircraft. EB?
Anyway, imagine eating that place up. It's probably expensive just to run a hangar like that. But it's probably good for, bring hangars in and bring airplanes in, rather, and, I don't know, probably do some work on them. But, it's probably just the expense of to run it is probably a bit much, being that it's that huge. John?
Those hangars were a city inside of a city inside of an airport. That's what those were. Anyway, alright, I'm destinated, gentlemen. So, I'm going to say 7-3. Catch us all later. Now I'm waiting to pull into a big giant elevator to take me up to the 40th floor of the building with the truck. Catch you later. Eugene, over to you. W2HCB.
W2HCB, 73, November 1, WTC. Have a good day, John. Yeah, and it's amazing because as big as these things were, the fire protection in them, they could fill the place within a matter of minutes with a foam blanket 12 feet high to smother out anything that happen to be burning. It's amazing what they do. Over to you, Gary.
I would imagine the fire protection in a building like that would have to be really huge. Just think about what would happen if jet fuel would attach inside the building and they didn't have fire suppression equipment at the ready. Would be kind of messy. John? And 7-3 to you, John.
Yeah, the 40th floor of the building with the truck. And, I'm thinking like the fuel, like they probably, before they brought the plane in, how to drain the fuel out or something, because before they bring it in. Outside. All those fumes. And, so Eugene, what do they have? Like a machine shop in the back, or it's all on one floor. Electrical shop and engine shop, all that stuff.
They have machine shops, electronic shops, mechanical shops, paint shops, airframe shops. I mean, upholstery shops. They could take a 747 and totally rebuild it there. I believe that's where they did there. What they call, I think it's the HX, where they would completely overhaul the plane after so many hours of flight time. So they needed everything to like totally rebuild the plane. And whatever little they couldn't do there, I guess they would just send out to Boeing, and Boeing would send it right to them. And they leave the fuel right on the plane, pull the plane in, and it's in the hangar. As a matter of fact, with the older systems, and they used to tell us, if you drive into one, you got to turn your overhead lights off, the flashing lights, because the system, the fire system, might mistake it as a spark and turn on a Daler system. And you didn't want that. Over to you, Gary.
John, think about the dynamics of it. The fuel is actually safer if you have a full tank than if you empty the tank, because you never get all the vapors out unless you were to refill it with inert gas.